meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change on a brain-wrinkling Wednesday. That means you're with Father Tom Coyes. Happy to wrinkle your brain a little bit. indeed it is. Whether you're listening live. Oh, wait a while. That could be.
That could be. The one.
There it is. That's for those of you who have been living under a rock or haven't listened to Father Coyes in a little while, that's The Matrix, my favorite resurrection scene from the Hollywood world. It's Neo coming back, and finally they realize. You know, that phrase, right before that scene, when Trinity asks, what's he doing? And Morpheus says, he's beginning to believe. That phrase comes to my mind at times when some people are breaking out of silence and becoming whistleblowers, in a sense. You know, we hear different whistleblowers today, people that are want to share something that they see, that they hear, that they know to be true, and yet that it is dangerous to say. And of course, people around them will say, what are you doing? And that phrase comes to mind. What is this person doing? He's beginning to believe. She's beginning to believe. And that belief is we have to root all our beliefs, of course, in Almighty God. And especially let's talk about the God of order, which is another way of saying the God of reason, the God of, not the God of rationalism, because that is a problem, just as fideism is a problem. So that's the darn thing about trying to get everything right in our Catholic mind and in our world around us, is that it is so very easy to embrace one side of a many-sided issue. This is the insight of phenomenology. I'm going to leave that for a different time.
Wow.
Anyways.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Yeah. What I have to start with, my friends, is trying to address the people who are really, I'm just going to say it this way. There's people that are ignoring so many scientists and doctors in regard to the trouble of the vaccine today. We're all in this mess together, as it were, but some of us are in it more than others, because some of us get sick more than others. Some of us have different medical issues than others, and we all want it to go away, and we all don't want to see more and more sick people. The question is how, and where do we go, and how do we get there? And the reason I say we should concentrate a bit on the God of order, the God of reason, is because maybe you've experienced this I know I have, and I want to try to address it in the sense when you share something from someone like a Dr. Stock, who I did a couple weeks ago, I think, or what do we got here? Dr. Peter McCullough, right? Dr. Scott Atlas. There's dozens and dozens of, thousands of doctors. But when you share something like one of their clips with a person who is totally angry or thinks those who are avoiding the vaccine are spreading misinformation, those who are complaining that all of the sick people in the hospital are the anti-vaxxers, and you share a clip, whether it's from being a doctor or a nurse or somebody, and they present different facts. They present a different reality. The person or persons will shoot back and say that's misinformation, and it's not only misinformation, it's dangerous misinformation. And one of the things I heard recently was that from a healthcare worker, a young woman who has been in nursing and or a nursing home.
Danger, Will Robinson. Danger, no, yeah. Will Robinson.
Well,
danger.
The danger is, in this sense, plugging our ears and not wanting to hear any other side. And especially someone who will criticize some of these doctors, and they take for their starting point the fact that they are in healthcare, and the one who sent the clip is not in healthcare. In other words, if I, as a priest, send a clip of Dr. McCullough, for instance, to someone who is in healthcare, they will respond by saying, "I'm in healthcare. You're not. I call this clip, this information, misinformation, and you are dangerous." And all I could feel is a person with their hands over their ears saying, "La la la la. I can't hear. I don't hear you. I don't hear you," which is it's not the scientific method that so many scientific people, especially if you're in medicine, you got to be open to science, and you're always trying to experiment with new technologies and new medicines and new treatments and all the rest. And the fact that somebody would point to the fact that they are in healthcare and dismiss someone else who is in healthcare because the person who sent them the clip is not in healthcare is irrational. It's such a because someone like Dr. McCullough, I keep a list of different doctors here, and I think I could spend the whole hour just reading my list, but I won't. But to give you a little flair, Dr. Jane Orion from Arizona, Dr. Scott Atlas from California, from Stanford, Dr. Stella Emmanuel Houston, Dr. Darrell Morris, Dr. Mihi, Dr. Nicole Johnson, who's a black woman, by the way, not that that matters, and when you're talking scientific research and what have you, Dr. Daniel Murphy from New York, Dr. Robert Campbell from Ohio, Dr. J. Bhattacharya, Dr. Harvey Reich, a Yale epidemiologist, Dr. Charles Morris, Dr. Dennis Kugvige, Dr. Molly Rutherford, Dr. Scott Jansen, Dr. Joseph Mercola, Dr. Lee Merritt, Dr. Pam Popper, Dr. Maloney, Dr. McCullough, I think I mentioned him already, from Baylor University. I could go on and on and on, and I have to share the idea with those I love those who I appreciate, those who I remember this, everybody, during our debates. To disagree with someone is not the same as to hate that person. Okay? To disagree with somebody over an issue, whether it be medical, philosophical, theological, political, okay? Any kind of disagreement we might have is not the same as to hate a person. Really, we are called not to hate anybody. But when certain evils take hold of someone, we can certainly hate an evil that they're embracing or an evil that they're doing. And in that sense, it's hard to separate the person from the doing. As Pope John Paul II said in his phenomenological work, the acting person, if you ever went to Catholic philosophy, you might have caught that book that he wrote. That was before he was Pope, but that was the main point he was trying to make. Our doing is so tied up with our being. You can't isolate one of our acts and say we are that captures the fullness of who we are.
Wow.
In our being. That
you just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's supposed to wrinkle your brain. Thank you very much. So that to recognize that all these doctors that I just named, and I can go on and on, thousands of guys, they also are in health care, and to say that I'm not going to listen to you. I'm not going to listen to a clip that you sent me because you're not in healthcare is a strange attack on the content, the essence of the scientific data. If two scientists are arguing, it is just part of the scientific methodology to keep discussing and keep sharing data, keep sharing facts. And of course, one of the great problems with the vaccine and our approach, even our masking policies and what have you, because we don't really know the effects that they're having. And there's a lot of evidence pointing to negative effects, not for everybody, but enough for some that should make us see the prudence and the wisdom of at least, in the very least, not taking the mandatory option of imposing, shall we say, experimental medical procedures on people against their will, the very least. So anyways, I had to share that because it's on my mind, and I'm sure you get it from time to time, too.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
As a priest responding to someone who would be saying, I'm not listening to the doctors that you're sending me because I'm not in the medical field, or I'm not in the hospitals. This is going to be a crazy parallel, crazy analogy, but bear with me because from my perspective, it makes a great deal of sense. Someone who's working in a hospital and is saying, you don't know the problems we're dealing with because I'm dealing with sick patients, a lot of them related to COVID, and therefore you're sending me a clip from a doctor who also deals in hospitals, works in hospitals, but the blindness or the desire to not listen to another side of the story seems to point more at something stuck in their craw about Catholicism, because I'm a priest, than it does about a scientific conclusion that one would make about how to deal with a disease. And it reminds me a little bit, and that person in healthcare who's complaining, and this is where the analogy comes in, as a priest, I have to say this. I have to be careful with whom I complain about the burdens of being a priest. For instance, amongst priests, we will often complain amongst ourselves that we have lots of funerals or lots of weddings, right? I got a real busy week because we have 4 funerals. If I could share that with a priest, and he'll kind of sympathize with me. If I share that with a regular layperson, they're going to say something like, well, that's part of your job. Why would you be complaining about 4 funerals? Because you went into the priesthood. You knew there'd be funerals. You knew there'd be lots of people to bury. And actually, you went into it because you like doing it. Okay. Now, there's sometimes I must say I do like offering funeral masses, but it gets to you after a while. And I could say, I chose this line of work, and I have to expect there'll be lots of funerals and lots of weddings, lots of masses. It's getting worse, shall we say, because of the priest shortage, as it were. But the same thing might be said of a healthcare worker, too. When someone's complaining, I spend so much time treating sick people, I could turn around and say, yeah, but you chose that profession, and if you're going to be working in a hospital, you're going to get a lot of sick people to work with. It's an analogy, admittedly, you know, so it's not perfect. Seeing and dealing with sick and dying people is one of the reasons why a lot of people aren't going into nursing and medicine these days, because a lot of people don't want to deal with sick and dying persons. Anyways, I had to open with that. I want to go to the issue of the synod. Pope Francis is opening a 2-year session, like a global Catholic synod movement. So we got to discuss that. And there's some interesting points in the Chicago paper. And so let's get back to that as soon as we come back from this break, all right? So let's take a little break, my friends. I'm going to read this one. Today, Wednesday, October 13th at 6 p.m., please join with the parishes of Our Lady's Triangle, St. Stanislaus Kostka, St. John Cantius, and Holy Trinity, with their pastors in a major Marian procession that will include members of the Chicago Police, Chicago Fire Department, medical personnel, clergy, and religious coming to pray the Rosary for Peace in Chicago. During the procession, the Rosary will be prayed in English, Spanish, and Polish. The procession begins today with Mass at 6 p.m. at St. John Cantius, 8025 North Carpenter in Chicago, then on to Holy Trinity, and ending at St. Stanislaus Kostka. In 1917, the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared to 3 shepherd children in Fatima, bringing a message of conversion, peace, and hope. In memory of this event, you are invited to process and pray the Rosary for Peace today, Wednesday, October 13th. For complete information, visit ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And scroll down to events.
The winds of change. The winds of change.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
When we're in crisis, where do we turn? We turn to our first responders. The people who run to danger to protect us. These days, our first responders do not often receive the acknowledgement they deserve for their bravery and personal sacrifice. On Sunday, October 24th at 10 a.m., St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish celebrates a blue mass recognizing our first responders, including police, fire, and emergency medical personnel. Come and celebrate with us at the Blue Mass Sunday, October 24th at 10 a.m. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Visit ststanschurch.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coy's here to wrinkle your brain a little bit, either live at noon on Wednesdays or in the podcast. Please remember to do podcasting. It's the best. It's a great way to keep abreast of the stuff going on in the world, especially in our Catholic world, which is the world. Boy, that reminds me of G.K. Chesterton's book about the conversion. And I'll try to get back to that at that point. But remind me to come back to that, okay? Thank you. But let's talk about the synod. In some sense, we already have a synodal church. Pope Francis is saying, he's going to open up a 2-year synodal process, ending with bishops and cardinals in Rome to make decisions. So I gotta share some of these thoughts. On the one hand, anybody who's an evangelist, anybody who's an apostle of Christ, anybody who's a teacher, should want to get a lot of people in front of them, as it were. If you have something to share, if you believe in something strongly, you should want to have an audience. And a big audience, then you could say, is better than a small audience. And so the Pope wanting to gather the whole world, what's different about this process, which Pope Francis is trying to initiate, and in this sense, I'm not gonna criticize it in this sense. I'll even give him kudos, because we are in the modern world today, and with all sorts of modern technology. I'm talking to you in a studio to a microphone, and you may be listening to it live, or you may be listening to it on a computer or a smartphone or something of the sort. And that's an amazing thing. We can send emails across the world, and we can, I was going to say fax things across the world. Even faxing is kind of old-fashioned, isn't it? You just scan and attach a document. There's the cloud, obviously. Okay, so we know we're in a modern world, and we know we can communicate much better in a much more wide sense than years ago. And, of course, in the history of the church, when you wanted to have a synod, you would call the bishops to Rome or someplace else. Did you know that a lot of the councils of the church are named from the town where they met? And so a lot of the councils that we have through 2,000 years of history were not in Rome. We're not in the Vatican. Ephesus, the Council of Ephesus was in a town called Ephesus. Council of Trent was in the town known as Trent. All these kinds of things. So anyways, not many are called Vatican councils. We had Vatican Council I and Vatican Council II. Some people are going to say that this synod would be a Vatican Council III of sorts. So accepting the modern world as it is today, the idea of trying to get as many people involved in the process as you can is not a bad idea at the outset. I'm not going to criticize that part of the idea. Lots of people like to give their opinion, right? And so going around and having listening sessions, a number of people will try to give their opinion. Of course, anybody who's been in one of those kind of listening sessions, either in the church or in your business and government and what have you, you know what kicks in quite quick, readily, is the fact that you might share your opinion, but the decision is already made. You know, that you can't help but deal with that reality. And so the opening, if you have several questions on the board, on the floor, and you're going to try to listen to as many people as you can before you make the decision, but you already have your decision, then opening the floor is more of a masquerade, more of a psychological move than it is really anything else. So there's that the aspect of gathering lots of people is not necessarily bad, but there are definitely indirect dangers about it. And the primary danger, I'm going to say it this way, and please remember this, and please think and pray deeply about this. The primary worry or the primary difficulty of getting everyone involved is reduced to this. Sin clouds the mind. Remember that. Sin clouds the mind. So to try to get a whole bunch of people together, let us say half the world or three-quarters of the Catholics of the world, and whatever listening sessions are pulled off and however they're done, sin clouds the mind. So that people are struggling with sin, don't admit a certain sin, are unrepentant of a sin, or are sorry for a sin just because they know they broke a law, as opposed to breaking God's plan. There's an important subtle difference there. You know what I'm saying? So, if you do get a lot of people together, there is that the difficulty of people coming and giving their opinions while either in a state of sin, or unrepented sin, or don't recognize this sin as a sin, or this lifestyle, this act, this moral choice as wrong, right? And so that's a big problem, my friends. Think of the bigness or the smallness of the group doesn't really affect what I'm saying here.
Wow.
Think of...
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
Good. I keep a little... I should have little flags here. Or every time I wrinkle your bell, I'll ring a bell. Every time you hear a bell rings, someone's brain has been wrinkled by Father Coy's. Okay. Back to reality. The bigness or smallness of the group doesn't really matter, doesn't change what I'm trying to say here. Imagine the College of Cardinals electing a pope, right? Okay. A relatively small group of individuals, when you're talking about something that will affect the whole world, right? Let's say there's I don't know the exact number of cardinals in the College of Cardinals right now, but for the sake of argument, we'll say there's 100 cardinals. And let's say 80 of them are in a pretty sad state of sin. Use your imagination, whichever sin you think would be appropriate, doesn't matter. It's still, my point is, sin clouds the mind. And so if that small group has a very large proportion of people that are not really in a state of grace. See, that's where that beautiful phrase, a state of grace, comes to mind. Recently, I was talking to a school principal, and she was talking about the school board members that she has to work with and deal with, as according to all, it's a good thing. We all understand the need and the importance of putting heads together, especially heads of those who are helping to find the money to do something like run a school. But she said she shared with one of those members, you know, it's important that our faculty and the administration be in a state of grace. And she said she looked at the person and she really got the impression that he didn't know what she was talking about. What, a state of grace? That just doesn't make sense to a lot of modern minds. If you're classically formed, if you've studied the things like the Baltimore Catechism or other kind of good catechisms, you know what I'm talking. That phrase means something to you, but to someone who hasn't had that, shall we say, classical, traditional form of catechesis, to say you have to be in a state of grace, it's too ambiguous. They would, what do you mean, a state of grace? I have to be where? I know where to be. I have to be in the state of Illinois versus Indiana. I have to be I have to be sober instead of drunk. Well, that's a little bit more to the point. But still, that you lose a state of grace when you commit a sin and you don't repent of it. You don't go to confession. You're not forgiven. And therefore, the point she's making is a very important point regarding the synodal church. You gather a gazillion people together and you listen. And of course, Pope Francis is constantly repeating, we have to listen to people. No problem there. You do have to listen to people and let them share where they're at. However, speaking as a priest, I got to guarantee you this, my friends, that the area of life that we would call sin doesn't come up in listening sessions or even in group meetings. That's why confession is so hard and so needed. When we go to confession, we don't want it public. We're embarrassed of our sins, if we know that they are sins. And so Catholicism with its form of confession is a great great blessing. So that's as listening to a million or a thousand or 2 million or 10 billion people doesn't change the fact that sin clouds the mind. And so I hope and I pray that Pope Francis and all the leaders of the church understand what I'm saying. But it often doesn't seem like it. For instance, we'll come back from a break. I'll go to some of the quotes that are attributed to Pope Francis in this beginning synodal process. But let's take a quick break here, and I want to remind you about today is October 13th, so it's a beautiful and important day. Today, please join with the parishes of Our Lady's Triangle, that's St. Stanislaus Kostka, St. John Cantius, and Holy Trinity, down here on the near north side, with their pastors in a major Marian procession that will include members of the Chicago Police, Chicago Fire Department, medical personnel, clergy, and religious, coming to pray the rosary for peace in Chicago and the world. During the procession, the rosary will be prayed in English, Spanish, and rosary. The procession begins today with Mass at 6 p.m. at St. John Cantius Church. That's 8025 North Carpenter in Chicago. Then on to Holy Trinity and ending at St. Stanislaus Kostka. It's all just, if it's a mile, that's most walking. In 1917... the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared to three shepherd children in Fatima, bringing a message of conversion, peace, and hope. In memory of this event, you are invited to process and pray the rosary for peace today. That's Wednesday, October 13th. For complete information, please visit ststandchurch.org. That's ststandschurch.org. And scroll down to events. Okay.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy, and you're listening to the Winds of Change.
Please bring your family to the cross outside of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, Saturday, October 16th at 12 noon, to join the thousands of faithful across the nation to pray the rosary for peace as Our Lady of Fatima requested. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located two blocks north of the Vision on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Visit ststandschurch.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. God bless you for tuning in to the Winds of Change. Father Coy's here to wrinkle your brains. I'm trying to talk a bit about the synodal process that Pope Francis wants to open up. And I'm issuing a very important warning, and that is the importance of speaking and seeking for the truth while in a state of sin. If you're in a state of sin, you're going to look for a truth that may not be a truth. Maybe we'll say it that way. And our Catholic Church and our Catholic leaders have to be very careful. It may be, it's certainly talked about as a historic event. Let's see, in looking at a news article from Christopher Lamb, worldwide synod process. It's a two-year listening, discussion, and discernment. The bishops will gather in Rome in October of 2023. And this is a historic event. It certainly is that, in a sense. But births are a historic event for families, right? The birth of a nation, like the writing of the Declaration of Independence, was certainly a historic event. The greatest historical event of all time was Jesus rising from the dead, right? Can't forget that one. So historical events can be wonderful, but historical events can also be terrible. The sinking of the Titanic was definitely a historical event. World War II, in fact, all wars are historical events by their very nature. If the synodal process makes moral and doctrinal relativism alive or creates a Catholic Church that accepts moral and doctrinal relativism. Notice I left out liturgical, because Catholic Church does have a history of various rites and liturgies. We can deal, but that's not actually relativism. That's the proper word for the fact that the Orthodox have their liturgy, all sorts of Eastern Rite Catholics have different liturgies, Byzantine, obviously, Roman Catholic. That's not the same as moral or doctrinal relativism. It's diversity. That's probably that's where the word best fits. But if the synodal process increases or creates a Catholic Church around the world that has doctrinal and moral relativity. In other words, it's if you live in Germany or France, then being a gay person is participating in the sacrament and is a blessing and is a true act of love. But if you don't live in those synods, then it's a sin. That's a moral relativism. And so we can go on and on with the different moral issues that are dividing the church. That's what I get the sense that so many in the hierarchy don't see how moral relativism is a bigger cause of division than some of the various rituals, ritual worship. Obviously, I'm thinking of more of a traditional liturgy versus a more contemporary liturgy. Catholic Church sort of gives its blessing to a little bit of variety in that regard. I remember when I went into the Hispanic ministry and was ministering so much for so many years with the Mexican people. At first, I didn't like mariachis. The sound, I don't know. I didn't have much of a thought one way or another. But being with them and having the mariachis at so many wonderful celebrations, and I gotta say, I love mariachis now. It's a great sound, and it reminds me of wonderful things. And there's a lot of differences in our rituals at times, and to say especially that the Trentine Mass, for instance, is causing more division than moral relativity regarding gay marriage, or even the way we treat and deal with communion, whether you have to be in a state of grace or not. That's an issue not only just for whether it's a question in regard to someone's marriage, but it's also a question that can and should come up when we're talking about Catholic school masses, right? Catholic school masses. How can I say this? I fear giving that message to a group of Catholic school children. What message is that? Is that, if you're not in a state of grace, you shouldn't take communion. How do you lose your state of grace? Well, if you miss Mass on Sunday, then you lose your state of grace. And automatically, teachers, principals, parents would pick up their tomatoes ready to throw at me, because that phrase, state of grace, doesn't mean the same as what it used to mean. So let's go here to another. If the synodal church falls into that more relativism on doctrines and morals, then you'll have to look for your identity, not on those things, but on something else, which is what we usually do, namely, like a national identity. We're still pretty good, basically, at wanting to be proud about a national identity. Our national identity here in the United States is going through a bit of a identity crisis, because that the sense of what is morally right and wrong in terms of basic Christian morality has been eroded. And the main religious divide within the United States of America for the first 150 years was the divide between Catholics and Protestants, and between Protestants and Protestants. They would just keep dividing like that too. This really can and should be a Catholic moment in the history of our nation, because Catholicism does have an ability to bring unity in the very fundamental issues, one of those fundamental issues is the belief in freedom. So that we're not going to force one to believe something or even act in such a way, unless that act is really damaging or hurting, which you can certainly make arguments for that. But obviously I'm thinking of the abortion issue and or breaking up of the family through other more, shall we say, liberal approaches to life, as it were. And if you don't have your identity in universal truths of faith and morals, you're going to look for something else to pull you together, stick you together. I saw a billboard on the way here to the studio that says, Todos Unidos, right? Todos Unidos. We are all united. And of course, every politician calls for unity. But United around what? Tell me what to be united. If you don't tell me what basic truth you're asking me to claim for my own and be united with you, then what you're really doing is trying to get me on your side by your wonderful personality. And so identities can center around a person's personality rather than faith and morals. These are all the dangers of a synodal church that is ready to buy into relativity and doctrines and morals. If, I'll say it this way, if the hierarchy can pull off universal listening sessions that got people on board with these many different moral issues, I'd be the first to start the parade or sing the praises of that. That's why I'll connect it to this. I've got to take another break, and maybe I could get a little bit of Chesterton here before we end. Where was I going to go? The synodal heir, one of the surprises, let's see, I got to take it from something that Pope Francis wrote in his, says, the Holy Spirit and his freedom knows no boundaries or tests of admission. I'm not sure what that statement means. The Holy Spirit in his freedom knows no boundaries or tests of admission. So that's a bit opposite of what Pope Benedict said when he said even God has to be limited to reason. In other words, God is not an irrational God. So there's a major philosophical problem in that statement. The Holy Spirit, in his freedom, knows no boundaries or tests of admission. Admission to what? Of course, on the one level, you're saying, well, admission to the church, right? We want everybody to be able to come to church. And there's a much difference between having the doors open for everyone to come into church versus everyone kneel down and receive the Eucharist and be in a state of grace and know what it is that you are receiving, right? So, but he's talking about surprises. And anyone prepared to engage in the synodal reform should expect some surprises. And some are saying, oh, that could be women priests. I'll have to say it this way. The women's movement in the world today is dominated by the pro-abortion mentality. It just is. When you say women's rights, that is another way of saying the right to an abortion. This is not the time to allow women to take the center stage in the sense that they will be teachers of an heir. I'd say unless and until women throughout the Catholic Church are adamantly pro-life and adamantly anti-artificial contraception, anti-divorce and remarried, as well as men should be, obviously, on these things, but they're primarily taken as women's issues today. So these things all get mixed in, and we have to move with the Spirit, but the Spirit of truth and true love, not fake love, shall we say. Okay, anyways, let's take another break. I'm going to repeat this wonderful event happening tonight, those who are listening today on October 13th. It's at 6 p.m. Please join the parishioners of Our Lady's Triangle, St. Stanislaus Kostka, St. John Cantius, and Holy Trinity, and their pastors in a major Marian procession that will include members of the Chicago Police, the Chicago Fire Department, medical personnel, clergy, and religious coming to pray the rosary for peace in Chicago. During the procession, the rosary will be prayed in English, Spanish, and Polish. The procession begins today with Mass at 6 p.m. at St. John Cantius, 825 North Carpenter in Chicago, then on to Holy Trinity, and ending at St. Stanislaus Kostka. In 1917, the Blessed Virgin Mary appeared to three shepherd children in Fatima, bringing a message of conversion, peace, and hope. In memory of this event, you are invited to process and pray the rosary for peace today, Wednesday. For complete information, please visit ststands.org. That's ststandschurch.org and scroll down to events.
The Winds of Change.
911, what's the nature of your emergency?
When we're in crisis, where do we turn? We turn to our first responders, the people who run to danger to protect us. These days, our first responders do not often receive the acknowledgement they deserve for their bravery and personal sacrifice. On Sunday, October 24th at 10 a.m., St. Stanislaus Kostka Parish celebrates a blue mass recognizing our first responders, including police, fire, and emergency medical personnel. Come and celebrate with us at the Blue Mass Sunday, October 24th at 10 a.m. St. Stanislaus Kostka is located two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. Visit ststandschurch.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. So anyways, moving from COVID to Synod to Chesterton. I think Chesterton can wrap all this together in such a way. And unless Pope Francis gets what Chesterton is trying to tell us in his beautiful book, Catholic Church and Conversion, we're going to mess it up. I guess that's what I'll say. And it'll take a long time to unmess something. So do you remember one of the chapters in G.K.'s book, he's trying to talk about how his conversion turned the world upside down for himself. And I think a lot of people who have had a real strong conversion would say the same thing. Now some people convert when they're young, or especially maybe when you get married, because you have a sense that it's better for a husband and wife to have the same religion, and so you do. That's beautiful, and that can work toward what Chesterton is talking about. But he's especially talking about someone who, on their own, in their prayer, in their thinking, in their reading, sees, I got to become Catholic, and it does, in a sense, turn the world upside down, or, in Chesterton's words, inside out. Basically the same thing. And at first he's talking about a new sense of what church is, not as a denomination among many, but as a whole worldview. The Catholic Church knows that it's living in a world that has lots of non-Catholic stuff in people and institutions. And so a lot of its ways and means deal with the world as it exists. And again, that means with people who don't know Christ, even hate Christ, who have fought against Christ and his ways. In that sense, Chesterton, I got to read this from the fourth or fifth chapter, The World Turned Inside Out, and he's going to compare. He's going to use another picture. Chesterton, I really got to write a book myself on how to read Chesterton. He's always, I guess I like him.
You just wrinkled my brain.
I think I like him because I have an artistic mind. If I could picture something, I grasp it better. And Chesterton paints his ideas with images, pictures. So he's going to do this, referring to the church in terms of walking in a major hall. Or let him say it here. So, in a profound and philosophical sense, the notion that the church is one of the sects is a great fallacy of the whole affair. That's that first point. Catholic Church is not just a denomination, one among many. This is a matter more psychological and admittedly more difficult to describe. But it is perhaps the most sensational of the silent upheavals or reversals in the mind that constitute the revolution called conversion. We all need to convert, and in that sense, we all have to go through this revolution, and some have to have a huge revolution, and others are smaller. But he goes on. Every man conceives himself as moving about in a cosmos of some kind. That's an interesting thought. Every man conceives himself as moving about in a cosmos of some kind. We all think we have some grasp of the world in which we live, right? And of course, the process of maturation from grade school to high school to college to adulthood to senior citizen, the vision of our world changes, right? Just basically, obviously, when you're small, your world is your block, mostly. I remember that. When you got a bicycle and you got to ride beyond where you can walk away from your house, you start seeing things and the world seems bigger. Then when you get to high school, you start seeing different kinds of people. And then when you get to college, you see different philosophies, people thinking this, and you're brought face to face with world history, a world that has wars, whereas when you were in eighth grade, you didn't really think much about the French Revolution. Unless you were in Mike Furman's class at Kingswood, he always taught about the French Revolution, to his great credit. Anyways, he's saying every man conceives himself as moving about in a cosmos of some kind. And the man of the days of my youth walked about in a kind of vast and airy crystal palace. Now, Chester didn't know that the big cathedral in Los Angeles was going to call the Crystal Palace, which was Protestant as it was built and now is actually owned by the Diocese of Los Angeles, Catholic Diocese. Anyways, so he's saying this image of a man in terms of religions, he's walking about in a vast crystal palace in which there were exhibits set side by side. The cosmos, being made of glass and iron, was partly transparent and partly colorless. Anyhow, there was something negative about it, arching over all our heads, a roof as remote as a sky. It seemed to be impartial and impersonal. Our attention was fixed on the exhibits, which were all carefully ticketed and arranged in rows, for it was the age of science. Here stood all the religions in a row, the churches, the denominations, or sects, or whatever you want to call them. And towards the end of the row, there was a particularly dingy and dismal one, with a pointed roof half fallen in and pointed windows most broken with stones. That was the Roman Catholic Church. And it was when Chesterton realized that it wasn't one church in this row, but it was the cathedral containing all the rest of the churches in broken ways. Well, God bless you for listening, my friends. You have been listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time. change.